Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Hello, Miles. How's it going, buddy? Did you fart? Horrible. You fart on the radio. Hello? That was my six-month-old son, Miles, on air. Pretty hilarious that I asked him on the mic to say hello and he farted. And he's probably going to be embarrassed if he ever listens to this when he's old enough. Let's just keep that our little secret for that, okay? Also, Wendy, my wife, caught a pretty funny picture of the moment, and I'll put that on the bottom of the show notes at globalfromasia.com/episode63 for those curious. Okay, and now thanks everybody for tuning in. Getting into the Christmas spirit, while you can't see much of Christmas stuff in China, it is getting my holiday cheer with WeChat messaging. I'm getting a lot of emoticons or emoticons that are being sent around. Some are pretty funny, some are pretty holiday-like, and others maybe Miles, my son, can't see until he's over 18. Okay, and now I'm excited to say we have another 5-star review on iTunes from Renault in Hong Kong, and let's read it out loud. He's also a blogger and friend of mine from qualityinspection.org, but I didn't bribe him to leave this review. Great interviews, 5-star, by Renault Anjuran from Hong Kong, China, November 29th. Very interesting interviewees. Keep it up, Mike. Thanks, buddy. Much appreciated. And for those of you listening who are too shy to leave a review, but do have some feedback, now is a great time. It's going to 2015, and I want to get some new things in the new year. If you can check out globalfromasia.com/survey and answer some questions, it's going to be highly looked at by me going into next year with the direction of the show. Okay, and now on to this week's show. We have Chris Gormley back for the third time, being on episode 9, talking about B2B sourcing business strategies while him and I were having some 7-Eleven wine. And again on episode number 23, giving advice and insights on getting a Hong Kong business card. And today's show is a little bit more fun, discussing the 11 things he and I both wish we knew before we came to China and Asia. We did enjoy some Vedette beer from Chill's Bar in Sheko. Thanks, Aaron, the owner there, for hooking us up. I hope you guys enjoy. So welcome back, Chris, on the show. This is a third time on the show. Thanks for being here, Chris.
How's it going, guys?
Cool. So today we're going to talk about the 11 things we wish we knew before we moved to Asia, a little bit more specifically China. Not everything is cheaper here in China.
Yeah, that's right. A lot of products that are commodities, you know, like oil, steel, electronics, iPhones, computers, deodorant, milk, processed meats from the West or fresh meats, all those things, they cost significantly more in China. You probably shouldn't come here looking for those things to buy to resell.
I'm just going to add a little bit, but our friend Attila, it's on episodes 21 and 22, he was sending us some pictures on WeChat about like notebooks and things in Walmart for like 30 cents for like a spiral full-size notebook for school, back to school. And in China, I think that's like a dollar US or something more. So just as an example, there's even commodities you think should be cheaper in China are not. So, you know, I think that's got to get through a lot of people's minds. And I think also the quality, the risk of the quality. So your price to quality is also another factor that I like to bring up.
$10 for a gallon of milk.
So, and it's probably, it might be real milk. Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe. All right, point number two. Chinese food in the Western world is different than Chinese food in China.
So I think my favorite when I was in the U.S. is chicken and broccoli. And it's kind of healthy, I think, the fast food version, a little bit oily. But that and then General Tso chicken, sweet and sour chicken, some of the stuff you might find here in certain variations, but it's totally different. There's tons more like local dishes in different regions, you know. There's way more spicy food. I think there's a joke, like, I don't eat spicy food in China anymore. It just totally like rips apart my insides. So I stay away from spicy food. I eat spicy in the U.S. a lot. I think it's the oils too. And other things.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of most local Chinese dishes, mainly because I'm not a big fan of really oily food or the risk that, you know, the supply chain of the food that's behind it. Some are amazing. There's a handful of dishes, especially Cantonese ones, that I love, but, you know, chicken feet, dog, duck neck, these kind of things, not my favorite.
A monkey brain. I'm looking for that. I just want to see it. I haven't seen that one yet, but.
Point number three, Asia is not what you read about online.
So, you know, this is my point, but I wanted to say, I think a lot of us want to do our research when we're maybe in home in America or in the West about preparing to come to China, maybe even listening to this podcast. Hopefully this helps you a little bit more. But I think a lot of the mainstream news and especially TV showing China was not really, at least when I was in America, was not at all helpful. When I came here, it was totally a shell shock. And it's not at all like what I read in the news there.
Yeah, it's a really dynamic place. And maybe the news makes it sound like there's just like, you know, two dimensions to it, but there's stuff coming from all directions at all times.
Yeah. So just, and also I'll make fun of myself, but I was a little bit ignorant. I thought Philippines and China and Hong Kong and Tokyo were all kind of like similar, but it's all so, I mean, I guess that's why I like it and why I stayed here so long, but it's so different everywhere you go.
All right. Point number four, be extra clear with your instructions.
So this is something maybe is important for every business. And, you know, I've kind of spent most of my experience building my own business inside of Asia. But, you know, I think SOPs, making standard operating procedures, which, you know, a lot of people talk about online. But especially in Asia, I think you got to be extremely clear. And maybe I'll quickly say, I think it used to be, I thought it'd be really cool to be more like creative and open about how the staff here works. But I think actually in Asia, or in China, maybe people really want to have exactly black and white notebook of what they need to do step by step, and it makes them more actually happier.
Yeah, just don't tell them to make that out of stainless steel. Tell them you want 304 stainless steel, and then check to make sure that they actually understand what you're saying, and then also check the metal to make sure it actually is what you want it to be, because you might be surprised.
True. So yeah, also check, or at least have other people in the process checking, whether, especially for manufacturing, but even in like web or service industry, you got to keep checking too. So this one is my point five. So that guy you've been talking to on Alibaba might not be actually the factory owner.
Yeah, a lot of people that are marketers online in China, but, you know, probably a lot of guys in most other places in Asia also that are trying to market products to you, They're people that they know a factory, or maybe their cousins own the factory, or they're associated with it, and they're the people that push it out and market it.
Yeah, actually, I have an Alibaba account, a supplier account with my Chinese company, yep. And I get people emailing me, or a Jane Chen, because it's not my name. So Jane Chen, she's just my team members, gets emails. It goes to my inbox, but it's like, dear Jane Chen, you have a new email. And it's somebody like saying they want to buy 1,000 pieces of this product that I list on Alibaba, and I could have Jane reply, or I could reply as Jane if I wanted. But yeah, just keep your eyes out, and you basically come here and verify yourself is the best way.
Yeah, and also maybe check the sign on the factory wall to make sure it's the same name as the company that you're sending money to. You don't want to send money to the wrong guy, because it puts the power in his position, and maybe you won't get what you're supposed to get.
Exactly. I mean, obviously, like, it's hard to cover all these points in detail, so we're just kind of going through very high level, but this is a huge book or podcast or expertise by itself.
All right, point number six, it doesn't pay to be shy.
So there's a lot of cool articles I've read, and I'll shout out to Dynamite Circle, which we're both members of, but we've read some guys that just almost don't even care about, you know, tomorrow, and they just go out and have like their assistant follow them and go up to the highest level person. And that, I think, works better in Asia or in China more than in the Western world. So, you know, sometimes just your persona and the way your confidence can really get through a lot of gatekeepers and get some deals that might have, you know, never expected.
Yeah, a lot of times you look exactly like the person that they want to sell to, which is, you know, unless you're like a, you know, Asian American, then this probably won't work too well for you. Although maybe if you speak really good English and they get confused, it can. you look exactly like the person they want to sell to, and everyone here is always selling something, so they'll be very receptive to you. Unlike if I was going to, you know, try to approach the CEO of Walmart, it'd probably be impossible, you know, to do that or close to it.
Sure.
All right. Point number 7, when hiring, use specialists and outsourcing instead of trying to do everything in-house.
So this is one of my points. I think I learned this the hard way, and I think a lot of business people learn, you know, you kind of want to have everybody in your, you think it's like an asset. You think having staff is an asset on your book value of your company, but usually it's actually, I've learned, a liability. And I think a lot of people are learning to work with like virtual teams and online part-time. So it's been much more effective for me personally to find somebody that's an expert in one specific task, get an exact task, even it might cost more, maybe hourly, than having your full-time people do it. You got training and managing and quality control. So I think the basic idea is break down tasks a lot and find the exact person to do that exact task.
Yeah, I'd say it's really great to have an arm's length in between the guy that's helping develop your products if he can't walk into the next office over, and also, like, you know, meet your customers and see where stuff's being shipped out to. That's an asset, not a liability. So and also there's more accountability, at least in this market, for a guy to perform a service through if he's working for you. The motivation points aren't there as much.
True. Maybe a quick word is maybe it almost makes it more black box or protects you if you break up all your knowledge to a lot of different people. And next point is me. Number 8, work for a CEO. Don't be an English teacher. This is Chris here.
Yeah. So a lot of people, when they first show up to many places in Asia and especially China, the absolute easiest thing to do is to get a job teaching English. And I'm not saying it's bad to do it as a springboard if you have absolutely no other opportunity at all. But the truth is, if you spend just as much time looking for a job or you know, being an assistant or being any part of any company that has potential or they're already big, you can get one working for somebody and progress at a very high rate within your career versus if you just teach English, well, then, you know, maybe you're going to become better at teaching English.
Yeah, so just a quick, you know, I think there's lots of opportunities. I think maybe being an English teacher is easier because they're better at recruiting overseas. So there'll be a lot of advertisements in the U.S. or in your home country for opportunities to come to China to be an English teacher, whereas you might not see those online or in your university or wherever you are. So if you just do a little bit of homework or get a little creative and reach out to, like, maybe someone at Alibaba, what we were talking about earlier, or reaching out to some companies in China directly and just making an opportunity rather than waiting for an opportunity, I think you can make something happen.
Yeah, they want your ability to speak to the people they sell to and to understand their mentality, and they're willing to pay for it.
Yep. So get creative, guys. Next one, point 9. Don't give away your intellectual property or IP.
I can say this from a personal level that I've helped a lot of suppliers at whatever level in the past improve their product or even create new products for them. And they've sold them to my competitors and charged me a higher price for it. So I think it definitely helps to have, you know, some... some agreement, any kind of agreement, and make sure that there's accountability for that agreement, that you're just not helping other people make their business better without you benefiting from that.
Yeah, and kind of similar like the point earlier about maybe breaking your process down or finding experts in different pieces. Maybe if you can also try to make it more complex, but if you break up your components to different suppliers, that also helps protect you.
Point number 10, predict the unpredictable.
That's my point. You know, I think I learned this when I first came to China, and I still take buses, but I took a lot of buses back then, public buses, and China has been growing so rapidly that, you know, I don't think they have time to train these drivers properly for the rules of the road, and I was sitting in the back of the bus and just kind of hold on for my life almost, and, you know, I think a lot of us here love the adventure, but at the same point, I didn't know if this guy's going to take a left or a right. He'd go from, like, the right lane to the left lane, so just... even on the streets, even in business, I think just being prepared. Sometimes don't don't go with your instincts. I know it's an unnatural thought process, but just kind of being prepared to make adjustments on the fly. I think that's important for any entrepreneur or business person, but especially I think in Asia, is just be adaptable and try not to think you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and sometimes people even set up a situation to throw you off where you're expecting one thing to happen, and then it turns out, you know, that you're disappointed, and all of a sudden you're thrown into a totally different situation where you're forced into accepting consequences that might be bad. You end up with a product that, you know, oh shit, I have to ship this right away, but I can't because this guy told me he was going to do one thing and then something else happened. And you have to really anticipate that and check the process all the way through to make sure that you don't end up in a weak position.
Cool. So hopefully that helps you guys. And the last point, point 11, people, you know, I think we're always say they can do something or always say yes. So don't just take for granted everything you hear and verify.
No problem. No problem.
May Wenti.
It's a momentai.
We'll leave that in. More wine every time with Chris on the show.
It was Mike. It's Lola. It's Lola. It's
Lola. Lola the dog here.
It's something that you hear very often in all of Asia, I would say.
Yeah.
Maybe not Japan or Korea, but the rest of Asia. When people, they don't really know what to say, or they don't want to lose your business, or they don't want to lose face, or they don't lose the trust or the deal, they just kind of go with the flow and they tell you there's no problem. And if you're not an expert in what you're doing, you don't know there's not a problem, so you're going to keep on going along with it also.
True. So just try to verify if they really can do what they say they can do, or test it, or do a small run, or try as early as possible to find out that if it's true, they can really do what they can do.
Yeah, and I suggest actually knowing the product you're selling, because if you don't, then it puts you in a very weak position. And actually doing real tests and certifications for products that you're going to sell, because maybe people say stuff that they think is true. Maybe they think, you know, it's a safe material and it's not poisonous, or that, you know, it's a properly designed component from their engineer, because the guy selling to you doesn't understand either. So verify.
Yep. Again, each one of these points could be a podcast or a book. So I think hopefully you guys get that point. And I think we just want to conclude here is, you know, we're two American white men, right? So, you know, we're not just talking about, you know, foreigners to Chinese. I think we want to basically also get the point across that this is how Chinese also do business with other Chinese people, for the most part. And I think they would also agree with a lot of these points.
Yeah, they use the word a lot, like relationships. That's very important to have relationships. And I think what it really means is social accountability. That if you screw somebody over in a deal, then, you know, like they have some other vice over you. And as an outsider, you don't necessarily have that. So, you know, that can be to your disadvantage. But, you know, all of these other rules, if you understand them and you do like the locals do, at least the smart locals do, then, you know, at least it'd help give you a little bit of an edge over everyone else.
Sure. So, you know, I think I think Chinese people would agree with a lot of these points. And, you know, that's the whole thing, is we're not in the circle of trust as an outsider. Even in Chinese, Wai Guo Ren is what foreigners are, which means outside people, not inside people. So by being outside of that circle of trust, you know, to cheat us or to make us lose our relationship with that Chinese business person is not as big of a risk for them. So they're more willing to lose that relationship if it's a low value relationship. So you just got to be aware of that at least.
Yeah, a lot of times it's, you know, it's considered a game. And I think it really is considered a game, you know, like commerce is a new thing within a lot of Asia and especially China. And, you know, the way you win the game is that, you know, it's like playing poker. If you make the guy believe one thing, and then, you know, even if it turns out to be another, if you end up with the most chips, then it doesn't matter. And the truth is that there's a lot of chips in China right now. Yeah. They're doing all right.
Yeah, so there's a lot of opportunity, but you got to also hopefully be protected and be aware. So hopefully these points helped. Thanks, Chris, for coming on the show again. And that's a wrap. Thank you, Chris, for being awesome and come back on the show. If people can reach out to him on LinkedIn and thank him for me, I'll put a link to his profile there in the show notes, again, at globalfromasia.com/episode63. And let's all enjoy these holidays. I love the time of the year. I think we all do. But for me, it's a good time to reflect on the new year, think about what we did in the previous year, and have a fresh, clean slate into 2015. Also, please don't forget to go to globalfromasia.com/survey and give me some of your ideas for next year's show, topics, format for the show, or maybe even might be video or more blogging and other things. So I'm really planning some new things. I want to hear from you. Take care.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.